Okay, good morning. Welcome to the library. We'll get started. My name is Troy Swanson. I'm the library department chair. I'd like to welcome you to the beginning of our annual graphic novel symposium. We've been doing this for a few years where we like to dive into pop culture and comic books and all kinds of nerddom and fandom that's out there. So it's a fun time. I encourage you to go out in the hallway, check out the comic shops that are set up. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome our first speaker, Carmelo Chimera. Carmelo is a longtime supporter of our symposium, so thank you for that. He owns the comic shops in LaGrange, also a comic shop, Chimera's Comics, on 95th Street in Oak Lawn. So if you go by, stop by to his shop, buy some stuff. But I'm excited to have him here as a creator. He has turned that corner from owner and also lawyer. He has a degree from the University of Chicago Law School, where he and some of his partners have written a comic, a graphic novel, and it's fantastic. And he's going to talk to us about that process and the collaboration and the roles that people play in that creative process, because it is kind of a unique thing that maybe not everyone is aware of. So with that, I will stop talking and turn it over to Carmelo. Thank you for coming. So thank you all.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Carmelo Chimera. I got a compliment once on what a great pen name I have, but it's my real name. And that's why we named the store Chimera's Comics. My partner's name was Brown. He thought Brown's comic sounded boring, so we went with that. I'm going to give you a little bit of an overview of what we're going to do today. I only have you for 50 minutes, so I'm going to try to be pretty brisk about it. When I was younger, you know, I got nervous speaking in front of crowds because you think you're going to say something stupid, and now I realize the real fear is that I'm going to bore you to death and you're all going to leave. So we're going to try to keep it interesting, and we're going to try to keep it fast-paced. This is more to keep me on schedule. I'm going to spend about 5 minutes introducing things, and it's going to be more interesting than you think because I've got a video. Yay. I'm going to spend 15 minutes on the process because I think that's kind of the core of what we're here to talk about today. And then in conjunction with that is production. Production's a little more technical than the process, but I want to give you guys some specific actionable information to leave with so that you actually have learned something today that might help you concretely. I'll talk a little bit about sharing your work. I could teach a semester on sharing and promoting your comic book because that is now my primary objective now that I've published my book, and I've learned a lot about it. I'd love to share with you. But we'll go through it pretty quickly because we're more focused on creativity today. I'm going to point out some resources for you, some things I recommend that you can follow up with if you want to learn more. And then we'll spend some time with questions. And you know, if you don't have a ton of questions, I might delve back into something like sharing my work, sharing your work, that we can talk a little bit more about. So if that all sounds good to you folks, I'm going to start with introductions. And I've got a little video here. We kickstarted our first graphic novel. And we were very successful. I'll talk about that in a minute. So I'm just trying to get the screen over here. Bear with me just a second. I swear it worked when I practiced it.
Comic books. Deal with or focus on what it would be like.
At least it wasn't boring. Planty in the real world. That was
I told you it'd be interesting, though, didn't I?
There's hundreds of thousands of superhero comic books, but very rarely, I think, do the comic books deal with or focus on what it would really be like to have these powers, what the responsibility of that would really mean.
This is one of the few stories I know of where we said, what would it be like to have superpowers and be a superhero in the real world? A lot of people say, well, what are powers like in the real world? This was a show, Heroes, which I loved and was very influential. Or they'll say, what's it like to wear a costume and be a vigilante in the real world? That was Kick-Ass. Rarely do I see, no, I have superpowers and then I put on a cape like a kid would. There are consequences to that. Not everyone wants your help. Not everyone's excited to see your help. And for someone who's naive, that's very hard to understand.
We have the opportunity to tell a really good story that is a coming-of-age story that a lot of people, I think, can relate to, that doesn't get bogged down with all the hang-ups that you get with, like, the bigger companies.
Magnificent is a story about a superhero who goes through all the same things in life we do. He has his heart broken. He learns about failure. He learns about perseverance. But through that allegory of a superhero. And growing up, it's just as painful for a superhero as it is for all of us. And he's being tortured and experimented on. When he learns what his true power is and that he's more powerful than he ever knew, he can escape now. But he's got to answer a question. Is he going to take out revenge? Is he going to become the villain? Is the cruelty of the world going to shape him into something ugly?
I mean, the character quite literally comes to a crossroads of you can go down this way or you can go down this way. You'll end up at two wildly different places. And I think at the core of our story, that's what it comes down to. And it's more of the decisions that make you who you are than anything life throws at you.
It doesn't matter if you've got superpowers. You're not immune to heartbreak. It doesn't matter if you wear a cape and tights. We all fall down sometimes. And then we all have to learn to get back up again the next day. The superhero allegory is just a fun and cool way to tell the story of a child becoming a man. With Magnificent, as with the comic book store, we want to put out our very best. Don't want to half-ass this. We love this story, we care about this story, and we want to tell this story. If we want to put out something that can sit on the shelf next to any other graphic novel and be just as high quality as anything else.
I want this book to look and be as awesome as all these other comics that come out through all these different companies. I'm not competing with the guy down the street in his basement who is just trying to draw comics. I want to compete with the guys who are doing the comics on a national level. I want to compete with the guys who are at the top of the industry.
To do it as best as we can is going to require the support of the community. And I know because it's through the support of the Chimera's Comics community that we've grown to 3 stores in just 4 years. I've seen what a community can do, and I know that if there are people out there who want to see this product happen, then with your help, we're going to be able to give you the best graphic novel we can.
That was 3 years ago. There's a few takeaways from that video. The first is I've lost weight. The second is I have a lot of talented friends. And believe it or not, I'm only 51 seconds behind my timeline. So we'll breeze through this real quick because Troy went through it.
See, shopping small is more important now than ever because the online retailers have completely cornered the market.
I promise you're not going to have to hear me give my shareholders talk. Alrighty. So, I am the founder of Chimera's Comics. We founded it in 2011. I was 21. I was in my first year of law school, but it wasn't hard enough, so I decided to open a store at the same time. I wrote Magnificent in 2009, and we worked on it for 9 years before we finished it, but we kind of took that break in the middle to do the stores. I am an attorney. I'm actually playing hooky from work today to be here with all of you. I work in a very boring group where we do private equity, mergers and acquisitions. But this is my superhero secret identity as comic creator and comic shop owner. And then I do sometimes consult for crowdfunding because I was so successful on Kickstarter. I wrote a book on that as well. I've raised over $90,000 on Kickstarter through various projects. So I do consider myself knowledgeable on the subject, if not the expert. Okay. So now we're going to get right into the creative process, and I told you I'd spend about 15 minutes on this, so we're going to be here a little bit. I wrote Magnificent, and I did a couple other things that we'll get to in a minute, but because I wrote it, I'm going to focus a little bit on the writing process, and that's something that's important whether you are the artist or not, because if you are going to draw your own book and you're talented enough to do so, which I am not, you still need to kind of understand what goes into the writing of it. I've made here this handy infographic to show you some of the different methods of writing a comic book. And the idea here is that this is a spectrum of control of the final product, right? On the far end, we have the artist having most control over the finished product. And on the other end, we have the writer, right? So way on the left, we have the Mighty Marvel method. And I don't know how many of you may have heard of this, but the Mighty Marvel method of comics is named for Stan Lee's method in the 60s, the Silver Age of comic books, when Stan Lee was writing basically every book Marvel had coming out. Avengers, Spider-Man, X-Men, he wrote them all. How did he do it, right? Well, he kind of didn't. What would happen is the artist would come in, Jack Kirby would come into his office, and he'd say, okay, Jack, in this issue, the Avengers are going to fight Loki, and Loki's going to come down, he's going to brainwash the Hulk, and they're going to fight. And that's it. That was all he gave Kirby. And then he'd say, okay, so now send in Steve Ditko. All right, Steve, in this issue, Spider-Man's going to fight the Sandman. He's going to vacuum him up. This guy's made of sand. That was it. The artist would then take that rambling, incoherent nonsense and draw 22 pages of story, give it back to Stan Lee, and Stan Lee would go and do the dialogue. And he would go and then he would really turn it into a narrative and say, oh, this image looks like this. I'm going to write this in here. And that was the Mighty Marvel method. So the artist got a tremendous amount of control there, even if the concepts maybe came from Stan Lee. This method gave us some of the more famous storylines. For example, how many of you have heard of the superhero, the Silver Surfer? This is something, the Surfer was just like drawn into the background of a Fantastic Four comic. And then Stan Lee saw it and was like, that's super cool. We're going to do Silver Surfer now. And he never, you know, came up with it originally until he saw it. So in the middle is us. I'll get back to that in a second. On the far end here, I call this the Alan Moore method. And I'm going to show you in a minute what an Alan Moore script looks like. But it's very, very detailed and very, very meticulous. What you have in the middle is kind of what I did on Magnificent. And what I did on Magnificent was I actually wrote a prose story. I did not intend for it to be a comic book at first. My artist then took that prose story that was beat by beat, but then he broke down the panels, right? He decided which specific images were going to show my story. Because every time you write any action in a comic book, you have now committed to a picture of that action. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to show you an Alan Moore script, okay? This is for Batman the Killing Joke, a great graphic novel some of you may have heard of. They turned into an animated feature. Just a little bit here. I'm going to read there from panel two. It says, same shot, but now we pull back maybe a foot or more so that we can see at least a couple of the puddle's edges, defining it as a puddle and giving us some sense of its location. I think those are the most words anyone has ever written about a puddle in human history. And you can kind of see a little bit more. It all follows like that. Watchmen was the same thing. It's like there's a button, and it's in the gutter. And the button's about 1 3/4 inches in diameter. And the button is like a yellow. It's like a canary yellow. It just goes on like that, right? So which method works for you? Well, here's a look at what I did for Magnificent. This is my first draft of it. And as you can see, I just kind of wrote it in like story mode. It's not something that I could have printed. This is not a book that I wrote. But it's a very advanced summary, I think, of what happens, right? It's very lean, but it's still, you know, prose. So it's a question of how much control you want to have over the final product and how comfortable you are with your artist. Now, this is what I'm doing these days, right? And this is probably what most people do, is they write a script like this. And here's your first pro tip of the day, is a program called Celtix is what I use, C-E-L-T-X. It's a subscription-based program, but you can still find the downloadable version online as well, and it automatically formats this for you, right? When you press enter and you started with a description, it knows you're going to now do dialogue. It formats it for the dialogue automatically. You press tab, you go right back to typing a page. It's very easy. It takes a lot of the hard stuff out of this, right? And that's, now that I've given you that tool and I've shown you something that was a real hurdle for me, was how to format this. What's the proper way to format it? Now I'd like to ask you a question I want you to think about as we finish talking about the process. I want you to ask yourself, what do you think is the biggest obstacle between you and maybe writing your own comic book or movie, whatever it is that you want to do to express yourself creatively? What do you think are the actual specific obstacles, right? Because sometimes a project like this seems so big that it's very daunting, and then you find out about Celtics, and all of a sudden your problem's not so big anymore. So I'd like you to try to narrow down for you what is the specific hurdle that's standing between you and your goal. Okay, so as to this method here, I think the question you need to ask yourself is how comfortable you are with your artist. If you are the artist, right, then the Mighty Marvel method is going to be a lot more like what you're doing. But if you don't know the artist, if you've hired an artist like I've done for my next couple works, I wrote this script because I knew what I wanted to see. And my descriptions are nowhere near as specific as Alan Moore's because I don't care as much. I know what I want to happen. And I want the artist, who's better visually at representing ideas, I want the artist to have their input. I want the artist to determine the angle and the panel composition and things like that, because it'll be more dynamic than when I do it. It'll be better than when I do it. I'll show you an example of that a little bit later. still on time. All right. All right. So when I write, this is my personal process. And you got to find something that works for you. But before I go and write the story, this is what I do. I start with my summary, right? I start with the ideas that I know I want to happen. My synopsis can be as long or as short as you want it to be. I like to establish the themes or motifs because I think something that every work needs to ask and answer is why. Why are you telling this story? And maybe it's just to entertain, but maybe you have like a point you're trying to get across. And then if you don't pay attention to that, you might get a point across that you didn't mean, right? If you don't take control of that, your work's going to speak for itself. I like to describe the characters. This is important because I think the characters describe the story. The character's arc is the story, how much the character changes from the beginning to the end. And if your character does not change during the story, if they don't grow or learn or face a challenge, one, you don't have conflict and your story's boring. But two, those characters are throwaway characters. There should be no throwaway characters in your story. Every character should have a purpose. Even if they're the comedic relief, they should still have some purpose in the story. Otherwise, they're just cluttering it up. Then I make an outline. And the outline, I always start with the traditional three-act formula that you've all seen. The normal plot curve is why I didn't include the graphic, that inciting incident, rising action, climax. And then I break that into thirds. And then I break that into thirds. And I think every act needs to have that inciting incident, the rising action, and the climax. Ideally, the climax of one act will lead you into the next act. And that's how you have a cohesive narrative at the end of it. Then I'll do the treatment. And the treatment is the most detailed description. That's probably closest to what I showed you when I showed you my original prose version of Magnificent, is a treatment. It's not the script. It's not the final product. But it's as if you were going to tell somebody the story start to finish, right? And then finally, I keep a section of notes where I throw in lines of dialogue I think would be cool, or specific images I think are going to be cool. Have that brainstorming space, right? You could do this in a notebook. You could do these in separate folders in your computer. You could do these in one Word document. But this is something I highly recommend, that you lay the groundwork for what you're going to write. Otherwise, you're going to meander around, and it's going to take you forever to finish your story. Now, this is what I call the Denis O'Neill method. Denis O'Neill is a writer. He's famous for writing a run on Batman that made Batman dark again after the 60s made him a joke. And he also wrote the very famous Green Lantern, Green Arrow run you might have heard of. This is where they dealt with a lot of timely social issues, including the Green Arrow sidekick getting addicted to heroin. So he was the guy who took all those issues head on. He's a very talented writer. This is an image from his run. He didn't draw it. That's the artist Neil Adams, but they worked together on both those runs I described to you. What I'm showing you here is how he breaks down his storylines for an ongoing series, right? So far, I've talked in generalities, and I wrote a single standalone graphic novel. But if you're going to write something ongoing, whether it's a comic book or a webcomic, which is a very efficient way to deliver your work these days, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, this is how he broke down the different storylines, because ideally, if you're going to write an ongoing work, you want to be able to hook those readers from month to month. And that means you can't just drop a story and start a new one from scratch. You should ideally be developing them. So he's got storyline A as the main story, 16 to 18 pages. This is based on a 22 to 24 page count, which is most comic books. Storyline B, 2 to 4 pages. You kind of want to set up what's going on. I like storyline B and storyline A to be related somehow, because otherwise it does feel kind of tacked on. Storyline C is a single page. It's just maybe you're just planting the seeds that this is something you're going to do. And then storyline D is so subtle, people may not even realize you've set up the next story, right? Until they get to the next issue, and now it's a whole page. And it's like, oh, I remember that thread. Brian Azzarello is great at this. He wrote 100 Bullets and a standalone Joker graphic novel that's very famous. We'll put like a helicopter crashing in the background of one book, and then in the next book, the whole thing is like in the helicopter or something like that. So that's very cool, and I think it keeps your readers very engaged. What I'm going to show you now, and I hope this is the second most boring slide we're going to do today, so I'm going to try to get through it quickly. This is my folder structure that I create when I work on a comic book, right? Over there in drafts is where I keep all my writing. I keep those notes I showed you. I keep the the script itself that I write, the different drafts of the script, the different versions of it. I keep the original penciled scans. You want the original artwork for all kinds of good reasons, so I keep that in their own folder. If they've been inked by hand, I have their ink scans as well. We'll talk about that later as well. In progress is where I would keep all the interim stages of coloring and lettering and things like that, which I'll show you in a little bit. And then final pages there at the bottom, of course, is your finished product. I like to use this naming convention, the title of the work, the stage of progress it's in, and the page number, right? So this would be like Magnificent Inks page 3 or Magnificent Lettered page 4. And that tells me everything I need to know very quickly and helps me keep very organized. Now we're going to move on to the artwork. And this is something I know the least about, so I'm going to spend a little less time on it. But, I mean, I understand how it works from a writer's perspective. These are more or less the steps in creating the artwork of your comic book. The artist will start usually with thumbnails. If you are the artist, I still recommend you start with thumbnails and just kind of get the layout of the page down and figure out how much you can fit on a page. Writers, this is where you're going to find out maybe you tried to cram too much on a page. Normal comic book has between 4 and 6 panels on a page. That's about all you can reasonably fit. To give you an idea, I have a page in here with 16 panels because I didn't know what I was doing. You can do that depending on if it's for dramatic effect or something, but you really should stay away from it. So thumbnails is where you'll break down what goes on what page. The pencils are what you expect. This is where you'll actually draw the artwork out. The inks, you know, inkers do more than trace. I want to get that across. Your inker's very important, should not be taken for granted. They add line weight, they add depth, mood. They can add so much to a work, or they can just trace it. And that's up to you, kind of. Again, if you're the artist, maybe you are inking your own work. Maybe you don't even have finished pencils. That's kind of what I have here. This is my next story I'm working on. It's called Cellar Door. It's a sci-fi and horror anthology, like Twilight Zone. And I wrote like a core story that runs through the anthology and ties it together. The artist is extremely talented, and he penciled it and kind of like half penciled it and then finished it as he inked it, because he inked his own work and he did a very nice job of it. This is another example of where I let the artist breathe a little bit. Like, I described that the creator was frantically coloring at the bottom, but I didn't tell him, break out the panel, have the arm and the page floating and not inside of a panel. Like, he came up with that, and that's how he decided to capture frantic. I would not have thought of that. I am not that clever. So I let him have that room in the script. The coloring breaks down into two parts. There is the extremely tedious part of laying flat colors. How many of you color things in Photoshop? Know what I'm talking about? Yeah, flats suck. So I did the flats for Magnificent because I'm a control freak and color theory is very important to me. So I wanted to decide what colors were what. I'm going to farm it out next time. And most professional colorists in comics, they farm it out themselves. They don't even do the flats. And then you have the finishing where someone will lay the highlighting and shading and give things depth and weight and three dimensions. And then finally, the lettering. The lettering I did do myself. And here's your next pro tip. For lettering, I used a program called it's called Clip Studio. In America, it's popularly called Manga Studio, and in Japan, it's called Comic Studio. It's like a $50 program. It's very, very reasonable. It has a lot of the same functionality as something like an Illustrator, except it's all designed for comic books. Illustrator is very powerful, but you end up with like feature fatigue, where there's just too many different things you can do, and it's very hard to figure out how to do the specific thing you want to do. But in Clip Studio or Manga Studio, whatever it's called now, you know, there's a button just for word balloons. You make the word balloon as big as you like and make the border as big as you like. And it's the same as you could do it with Illustrator, but you can do it with one button in Clip Studio. So if you know you want to make comics, that's a really good investment. This is just a look at some color guides that I had for Magnificent here, where we did his costume. And so this is the kind of thing, you know, I might give to someone who's laying the flats. And again, you know, if you really care about every color like I did, maybe you got to do it yourself or see it more closely. But if maybe the only thing that really matters is what color the superhero's costume is, you just kind of give them this and they can work off something like this. This is my next short story. It's going to be in the same anthology I told you about. It's called The Oedipus Paradox, and it's a 13-page like horror story. And I wanted to show you this because I lettered this page myself. I wanted to point out a couple of things because these pages have basically everything that's going to be on it. It's got like caption boxes, there's a title, and then there's the different word balloons. I did all of this on Clip Studio myself. I can do a page in about an hour. on Clip Studio. Couple things I want to point out for lettering. Firstly, you want to use your negative space as your lettering. And if you're an artist, you want to leave yourself negative space, right? We don't need a ton of detail in the background if I'm going to cover it up with a bunch of words. The other thing is, obviously, you don't want to cover up your subject, but the really important thing is you don't want to cover up multiple subjects if you can help it. Otherwise, that flattens the work. If you look up in the panel in the upper right-hand corner where it says Welcome to Montana, you'll see that there's one caption box in front of the sign, and there's one to the side of it. The wrong thing to do would have been for me to cross over the sky and Montana with that caption box on the left, and that would have flattened the artwork. Now, it's not 3D, but it has an illusion of depth because of the perspective of the car driving into the horizon, and I could have destroyed that perspective if I had put that caption box in the wrong spot. So that's something to think about as well. Again, you see it in panel two there on the page on the right. You know, I kind of put the caption in front of the bar, but I could have flattened the bar and the background if I had put it in the wrong spot. So I just wanted to give you kind of an idea of how that looks. I'm a little over on what I meant to talk about for the process, so I'm going to wrap this last part up because this is just very technical and very specific. If you're going to, and this does segue us into the next part, so maybe I can cheat at the timeline a little bit. If you are going to submit your work to a publisher, these are the steps I would encourage you to follow. First, you have to check whether the publisher has open submissions or whether you need to send them what's called a query letter before you submit. Do not cold submit if they do not have open submissions. They won't even bother looking at it. It'll be a waste of time. And if they're really upset with you, they might blacklist you. Include a one page they call executive summary. The word executive should not scare us. It's very simple. But this is just where you can kind of give them the pitch, the real quick, I have you for 2 seconds and I've got to capture your attention. That goes in the summary. This is very important. 5 pages at least of completely finished artwork. If your book is going to be a full color book, then it needs to be 5 full color finished pages. And if you're pitching them the next Walking Dead and it's black and white, that's fine too. But it needs to be what it's actually going to look like. Then give creator bios. This is important. It's not perfunctory. This is where you need to kind of give them the idea that you could finish your project, right? Especially if you're a first timer, they do not know if you can meet a deadline. They do not know if you will follow through unless you give them an idea that you're somehow credible. That is the biggest hurdle because everybody wants to make comic books. I bet you a lot of people start making comic books who never finish them. In fact, probably most comic books go unfinished. But if you show them the finished artwork and you can kind of give yourself some credibility, then maybe they'll follow through. Whatever else you think would be helpful, this is unique to you. And then make sure to check their submission guidelines because every publisher is going to have specific submission guidelines. And you don't want to submit something that's outside their brand. You know, I could probably send Image Comics Magnificent because they do some superhero stuff, but I couldn't send it to say like Dark Horse. They don't really do any superhero stuff. You know, they do more monsters or horror or things like that. So now moving into production a little bit, and this is, I did the publisher thing first because if you're this involved in production, your publisher is not not overseeing this as detailed as your publisher is going to oversee this, and you don't have to be as detailed with it, is what I mean to say. These are a couple of different ways to distribute your comics digitally I wanted to share with you, and below are some technical specifications for you to write down. I have a digital version of Magnificent, and if I had put the print-ready pages together, there's 90 pages in here, it would have been about a 2 gigabyte, 3 gigabyte file, right? So about like a DVD or Blu-ray, whatever you guys watch these days. So that's too big to email. It's too big to let people download from Google Drive. It's a huge cumbersome pain in the butt. But by saving them in PDF and this is the smallest file size, which is a setting in Photoshop, at 150 DPI, they became much smaller. It's maybe like 20 megabytes, right? And then the color profile you need to use when you're working digitally is RGB. Apologize for those of you who already know this kind of thing, for the writers or do-it-yourselfers who are going to take on more of the project. This is very important. Primary colors digitally are not, you know, not the crayon primary colors. It's all light comes from red, green, and blue, and that's why your color profile needs to be red, green, and blue. You can distribute your comics serialized as web comics through things like Webtoon, Duck Web Comics, or Smack Jeeves. And that's a great way to build an audience, build a following. You could put out your comic in pieces or all at once. You can sell your comics digitally on Comixology. They have, you know, Comixology Submit is open, and you can just put your work right on there. So more so than ever today, putting your comics in the hands of readers is very, very easy. And that's something I'd like you to think about as you think about putting your work out there and getting it published. I'd ask you to think about what a publisher does for you, right? The publisher will promote it. The publisher will distribute it. That's it. That's what the publisher does, right? And they might finance production. We can do all those things ourselves now. Technology has made it where we can distribute them ourselves. Technology has made production cheaper. It has made financing more available. We'll talk about that in a second when I get back to Kickstarter. And then promotion. I mean, you can go on Facebook, Twitter, wherever you want and buy whatever audience you want at any time, and you could do it dirt cheap. If you're going to print, these are some of the printers I recommend. Kraken Print is what I used. They're local. They are very, very reasonably priced, and their finished products are spectacular. And when you get a chance, I'm outside too. You can come see Magnificent for yourself. You know, whether or not you like the story or the artwork, the finished product's very, very good looking. It's a very good looking book. Print Ninja is also great, very expensive, but the thing about Print Ninja is they have an excellent calculator on their website to estimate the cost of printing. Most printers, you need to contact and give them specs, and they'll email you back a quote, but Print Ninja has a very easy way to compare apples to apples. Like, well, what's the cost if I get 500 copies? What about if I want 1,000? What if I want spot gloss on the cover? Very easy to calculate, so it's great for creating estimates too. And then you have Kablam. Kablam does not do offset printing, right? There's two kinds of printing. There's short runs, and then there's offset printing. So if you're going to do like 250 or less, you need this short run or print on demand kind of printer. Kablam can do that affordably and of reasonably high quality. I'm not crazy about their final product. I think they bow a little bit in the center of the pages, but it still works. It's still very affordable. But if you're going to do 500 or more, you're going to look at Kraken or Print Ninja. These are print specifications down at the bottom. 300 dots per inch is the minimum for print resolution. The color profile has to be cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. CMYK, those are the primary colors when we're dealing with a printer. Any blacks on the page need to be rich blacks. That means 60% cyan, 40% magenta, 40% yellow, and 100% black. That gives you a rich black. Otherwise, it prints out, and it's not 100% black. It doesn't look solid, and you end up with like tones of gray that are not what you intended. Save it as a Photoshop PDF in the largest file size. If you're not using Photoshop, you'll have to find the equivalent thereof. PDFs are fine regardless, but if you use Photoshop, save it like that because then you can always edit it later. We're going to talk a little bit about pricing your book. This is the most boring slide. I promise this is the last boring slide, I think, anyway. If you're going to price your book, you need to know a couple things. If you're going to sell your book through a distributor like Diamond or Ingram, and you can do this even without a publisher, the distributor's going to want about 70% off the cover price, right? That's because they're going to turn around, they're going to sell it to me at Chimeras Comics, my retailer is in the middle, at 50% off cover price. Then we have you at the end there. And for this to be a profitable venture, you want to at least double your money. Now, you might say, oh, yeah, but Carmelo, I'm an artist. It's creative for its own sake. That's super duper. But it's not sustainable if you want to do it long term and if you want to do it as a living. You have to make a profit doing it. Profit is not evil. So you have to calculate it in. So I did a test calculation. $2.99 comic, which is, well, probably about $3.99 these days, but the math worked out nice. $2.99 comic book covers about 22 to 24 pages, minus $1.50 to a retailer like myself. Divided by two, your profit is 75 cents per book, right? That means you have to print the book for 75 cents a copy, and that tells you how many copies you need to print. Now you can back into that number and say, okay, at 500, it costs me, you know, a dollar a book, but at 1,000, maybe you get 75 cents a book. Of course, it does add up your bottom line because now you have to put out cash to print it, but now you know how you can do it profitably at a bigger scale. That's why in the short term, print on demand is great or digital is great because you can distribute those things very cheaply and very affordably while you build an audience that would support a quantity like that. And then over here, I put a barcode. This is an actual barcode. I wrote a novel version of Magnificent as well. You can get barcodes. This is your third pro tip on Bockers.com. I might be pronouncing it wrong. It's B-O-W-K-E-R-S, Bockers.com. to make yourself legitimate, buy a barcode. They is an international registry. You scan that barcode in any country in the world. It's going to tell you it's magnificent. It's $12.99. I teamed this up with the pricing because you want to include the price on your barcode there when you create it. You buy that ISBN number from Bakkers. They're very expensive if you buy one. I think it's like $300. But if you buy like 30 of them, they're like, I don't know, $10 a piece. The price goes down. It just plummets. Like, it really just, the more you buy, the much, much cheaper they get. So, you know what? I was mistaken. It's $125 for one, and it's $300 if you want like 10 of them, something like that. But it's worth it. Now back to funding, since we're talking about money, and this is, again, my area of expertise. If you wanted to ask me some questions about this later, you have a lot of options to finance your work now without a publisher. You can use Kickstarter. You can use Indiegogo, which is, I don't want to call it diet Kickstarter, but it kind of is. GoFundMe, don't bother. Don't waste your time with GoFundMe. I'm going to recite my entire book on GoFundMe verbatim right now. Don't waste your time. That's my book on it. All right. Patreon is a little different than the others because Patreon is recurring. Patreon is something where you would get regular payments every month. Boy, that sounds great. And if you're somebody who is putting out a lot of art, you're putting out a regular webcomic or whatever, that's your ticket right there. I think that's a great thing. It's a great new tool for us. I love it. I can answer tons of questions about this. Like I said, I can and have given entire talks on this, and I can teach a semester on it. So I'm not going to spend too much more time. You can tell me how much time you want to spend on it in the questions phase. Now, back to sharing our work. We have here different avenues to just put it out there, right, to market the book. Email marketing is the best way to market online. Far and away, surveys show that people who... to the extent that people want to see advertisements online, they want to see them in their email. When they're on Facebook and they're on other websites, they like to be entertained. They're not necessarily there to be pitched. Their email, they might not mind getting a coupon or a special offer in their email, okay? Facebook is still the king of social media promotion. There's 2 billion users globally. It's still the best way to reach people, and as far as buying people's traffic, it is the best targeting out there. If you wrote, you know, a horror time travel comic like I did, and it's targeted for people over 18, I can set it to 18 and up. I can set it to people who've shown an interest in things related to horror or time travel, and, you know, I can end up buying that traffic for like a quarter a click, right, or less. Twitter, I wouldn't pay to advertise on Twitter, but the comics community is very active on Twitter. It's a huge knowledge gap for me. I'm not very good at it. But Twitter is a great thing because you can interact directly with your fans more easily than really any of these other platforms will ever allow you to do. Direct messaging, direct tweeting back and forth makes that very easy. And a lot of comics creators are on it. You know, we could get basically anybody we wanted on Twitter right now. And if we were, you know, might actually be able to talk to them. Have your own website. You've got to have some kind of presence to draw people to. All of these other things are great, but you are leaving your fans on someone else's platform unless you bring them back to your website or your mailing list. Even on your own Facebook page, it's not the same because they're still Facebook's user. You kind of want to convert those people to your user. Conventions are very important. Meeting people face-to-face is very important because nobody wants to buy anything from someone they don't like. And they can't ever get to like you if they don't meet you or get to know you. The hope is that you're friendly, because if you're like me, you come do these things, you lose fans. But if you're a nicer person, maybe you might actually gain a few. BookBub, Goodreads, and Amazon all have author profiles, and you should have a presence on all three of those. They're on here because you can also buy traffic on those. You can participate in promotions or giveaways. Amazon, I just read the other day, I put it on here, is now the third largest seller of advertisements online next to Google and Facebook. And the thing about advertising on Amazon, remember I told you, you can do it relatively cheaply. The thing about advertising there is you already have shoppers. They're on Amazon to buy things. That's different than even Google. Any other platform, they're there for some ancillary purpose. But if they've gone to Amazon, they're there to spend money. So that's where you want to try to capture customers. This is a finished page from the Oedipus Paradox as well. I just kind of threw that up there for fun. I needed a picture. And I did it this morning at like 5 o'clock, so I had to start throwing stuff on here. You could tell the pictures are getting of lower quality. This is the first thing that showed up when I Googled superheroes and money, and I thought it was cute, so I put it up here too. These are places you can actually sell your work. So we talked about marketing your work. This is where you can actually sell your work. Your own website. You can have your own website and use something like a WooCommerce or something like that. Or if you're very technically literate, just make your own website where people can spend money. Amazon, they take a big cut, basically the same as any other retailer, about 50% when it's all said and done. But they have a lot of users, and those users are there to spend money. And they can cross-list your product with similar products. You can't do that on your own website. You can make a Shopify or Squarespace store, but I think for the effort and the money it costs to maintain stores like that, you might as well just do it on your own website. Of course, if you're completely technically illiterate, which I basically am, then Shopify is a great answer, right? Because they'll do all the hard work for you and make it a very clean, good-looking product at the end. And then finally, Facebook stores. I kind of threw this on there because you can do it. I guess if you are going to have a Facebook presence, it makes sense to let people spend money there. But it should not be your first choice. And resources. I told you I was going to spend 5 minutes on this, but if I spend 1 minute on it, then I still have 10 minutes for questions. So these are what I recommend you go out and read or buy. I can sell them to you at Chimeras Comics if you want, and I'll give you a student discount. Or you can go on Amazon and get these. But this is what I recommend you read. Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud changed the way not only that I read or write comics, but also how I read them. Everything I know about panel composition or page layouts or color theory came from Understanding Comics. How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way was originally printed in the 70s, still in print today, still a standard for most comic artists I know. So I highly recommend it. The Webcomics Handbook is something that was a small press book. I've met this creator myself at conventions. I'm sure you could run into him at the next Comic-Con that's in town. But it is the best step-by-step guide, very, very specific. When he says handbook, he means it. He's not just going to sit there and wax poetic about how great comics are or anything like that. If you want philosophy and theory, Understanding Comics is great. But if you want to know, like, how do I get into a Comic-Con? What do I bring with me to a Comic-Con? How should I set up my table so that I can actually sell things? The Webcomics Handbook is for you. Stephen King on Writing, every writer should read. I won't say more about it because it's not as specific as these others about comics, but you should read it. And the DC Guide to Writing Comics by Dennis O'Neill, who I mentioned earlier. This is where I learned that ABCD method I showed you earlier for ongoing series. In my personal opinion, as it relates to specifically writing comic books, that's the best book out there, right? It's good to know the theory. It's good to know the practical stuff. If you're an artist, it's great to know that. But writing comics, that's your ticket. Finally, another resource if you want is, if you want to read it, this is a link you could go to. You could do it right now on your phone if you want, bit.ly/freemagnificent. I will sign you up for my mailing list, and I will send you a free preview of Magnificent. This is something that I've been working hard on that I think we can all learn from a little bit is, ideally, you want to entice people to join your mailing list so that you can show them your work, and you do that with some kind of meaningful offer like this. You know, if you don't know me, it might be a hard sell to ask you to buy Magnificent in a $25 hardcover. It might be an easier sell to get you to download a free 22-page comic, and now that I've given you a third of it, you have a pretty good idea whether or not you're going to like it. And you can always unsubscribe, right? I'm still learning about email marketing. I use my email list twice a week. On Mondays, I send out something nationwide. I have about 17,000 followers, and I share that with them where my publishing efforts are going, you know, and the new comics I'm working on, things like that. And then on Wednesdays, I send things to local customers only, and that'll be store events, signings, coupons, sales, things like that. So you kind of have to decide, you know, who's your audience, what are they up to, what do they care about. But if you want to see how I do it, you can sign up right there. And finally, I'll take your questions. This is the question from DC Comics. It seemed appropriate, so I thought I might use it. So anything you guys want to know about, now's the time. What have you got? Yes. My name is Carmelo Chimera, like the monster. What a great question. That's the best question I've ever gotten. Thank you. I'm honored. Anybody else? Questions? We can talk about the process. We can talk about Kickstarter. I can talk about collaborating with creators. Or I can just start telling you funny stories about How I Made Magnificent, because it was quite a journey. Back there, yes, what have you got?
Here.
How do you balance your work like as an attorney and as like comic, like narrator and artist?
Yeah, that's a good question. How do I balance being an attorney and all the comic stuff? Poorly is the answer. I balance it very poorly. Just do everything a little bit less good and you can do more things. That's a jokey answer, but it's also kind of serious. If you spread yourself too thin, you're maybe not doing your best work at everything that you're doing. So you need to decide your priorities. You need to decide how much time you're going to spend on things. My answer, how I actually do it, is I compartmentalize. When I'm at my office, I have set times. I'm only doing lawyer work. I won't say I don't do comic work from the office. I don't do it on company time, but I do need the quiet space. I need the computer. They've got a big scanner I can use. It's all on the up and up. I set aside, like, okay, I get 30 minutes at the end of my normal workday, and I'm going to do what I need to do there. You know, if I go to the comic book store, I'm only doing comic book store stuff. There's rooms of my house where I'll do my work in my library. I don't do any work in my bedroom, right? If I go to my bedroom, it's to go to sleep. And that's how you can balance all those things. And balancing your things like sleep is just as important as how I balance my work. Because you will break if you try to do too much. I have broken. I had to put myself back together again. So heed my warning. Yes. Smart guy. Yeah, found the cross section. No, I do it all myself. Yes, that's a great question. Copyright.
Can you repeat that, because it's hard to hear?
Yeah, so the question I got was, do I do my own intellectual property work, copyright, trademarks, things like that? Yes, I do. It's handy to have the skill to do both. They're not incredibly difficult to do. I can, and if you guys want to talk more about IP, you can find me outside, and I can tell you kind of the difference between copyright and trademark. Very important to register your copyrights. This is the thing I want to, the little nugget I'll leave you with. You have a copyright the moment you put a pen on paper, automatically a God-given, well, constitutionally given right to your copyright. However, it's very hard to enforce unless you register the copyright, and that's different. Trademarks, you do not automatically get a trademark. You automatically get a copyright. But if someone were to steal Magnificent and I were to say, hey, you stole Magnificent from me, the judge is going to say, well, how much did it hurt you? How much money did you lose? And I just started. I probably didn't lose very much that I can prove yet. But if you register, you are entitled to statutory damages. Automatically, no questions asked. And I think they're like $250,000. So for the registration fee, you should register your copyrights.
Where's the question over here?
I'm sorry. I saw this gentleman before I passed him up. Can I do? Yeah. Say that again? This information for my presentation? Only here today, but if you want, I can make it available. Sign up for my mailing list, and I'll distribute it through my mailing list. Also, if you follow Chimeras Comics on Facebook or on my website, you'll be able to see it there. Also, I believe the library has filmed this and is going to put it on YouTube, so you'll be able to watch it there as well. Excellent. This man wrote down every word I said. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to snub you earlier, my friend.
That's fine. What is his power?
The Magnificent's power, I'm so glad you asked, because the answer is that it's a secret. I will give you this, though. It's a power no other superhero has ever had, and what it is actually a mechanism of physics that explains all of his other powers. When he's young, he thinks he can fly. He thinks that he's strong and invincible, but he actually only has one superpower that lets him do those things, and when he finds out what it is, it gives him the power to do more than he could ever imagine. And that's what takes us to the climax of the book. That's why I can't really tell you what his real power is. But good question. Thanks for that. Yes?
Yeah, I was going to ask, where can people see a sample of a query letter for a comic?
Sample query letter. Well, I would love to be able to recommend a specific one to you that I can endorse as being good, but I can't. And what I would do is I would just Google sample query letter. You probably won't be able to find one very easily just for comics. You probably find one for books very easily. That's something, I'm getting the sense that there is interest in learning more about this sort of thing, so perhaps I'll put some resources like that together on my website and social media and share that in the coming weeks, because that is something valuable I'd like to give to you. Anybody else? Do I have any more time? I have negative 60 seconds. We'll take one more question.
How do you reach younger audiences?
How do you reach younger audiences? That's a good question. If you're going to use things like Facebook and Twitter and things like that to reach them, through their parents, right? And to be honest, they're the ones who have the money anyway. So you need to convince the parents that it's something to give to the kids. I will tell you, I met some children's book authors over the weekend, and they told me some very interesting things about some profound differences in children's books versus comic books. They were published children's book authors. They told me they never talked to their artist, which I thought was very interesting. The editor handled all of that, and they would get proofs and be like, do you like it? Because we can change next to nothing. And they were just kind of stuck with that. I thought that was a very interesting tidbit. Boy, I tell you, I guess kids are using mobile devices more and more now than ever before. So you probably still could reach them, you know, online, but I would target their parents.
Okay.
Is that it? You're good?
Yeah. How about a round of applause?
Thank you all. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
It was wonderful to meet you all. I'll be out in the hallway if you want to talk more, if you want to take a look at Magnificent.